All right, everybody, the stock market's going absolutely nuts right now as we speak. Tesla is up 18%, 19%. Donald Trump just put out a post about an hour ago that talks about a brand new approach to tariffs that has changed dramatically here. We've talked a lot about the different possibilities on this channel, but we have confirmation that Trump is hiking tariffs on China to 125%. And authorizes a 90-day tariff pause on everyone else. I'm going to read this post real quick. Based on the lack of respect that China has shown to the world's market, I wish I could do a Trump impression, but I can't. I am hereby raising the tariff charge to China by the United States of America to 125% effective immediately. At some point, hopefully in the near future, China will realize that the days of ripping off the USA and other countries is no longer sustainable or acceptable. Conversely, and based on the fact that more than 75 countries have called representatives of the United States, including the Department of Commerce, Treasury, and the USTR, to negotiate a solution to the subjects being discussed relative to trade, trade barriers, tariffs, currency manipulation, and non-monetary tariffs, and that these countries have not, at my strong suggestion, retaliated in any way, shape, or form against the United States, have authorized a 90-day pause and a substantially lower reciprocal tariff during this period of 10%, also effective immediately. Thank you for your attention to this matter. And of course, like we showed before, the entire stock market, not just Tesla, this thing keeps going up, Hans. It's at 19% now. Tesla, 19% to 64%. And if we look at the NASDAQ, it's up 10%. The S&P is up 8%. The Dow Jones is up 7%. The VIX, the volatility index, is down 27%. So what a crazy time we live in. If you follow this channel closely, you know that one of the theses that we had for a few days now was that this was going to be, this whole thing most likely was an anti-China policy, an anti-China approach. Now, people that don't like Trump will say this is Trump folding, and this is Trump sort of giving in to pressure and saying, you know what, I'm not going to go ahead with the craziness. I'm getting too much pressure. But I think what's probably more realistic, in my opinion, is that there is enough being shown from his perspective that he sees there's weakness in China. And he has enough from other folks to say, okay, let's make a deal to move manufacturing out of China and into our locations more so that we can weaken a country that we're all very heavily dependent on since COVID has highlighted that. And then we're going down the path of trying to make ourselves stronger. And of course, companies like Tesla and others are going to benefit tremendously. So what's your read, Hans, on where we are so far?
Yeah, so I would say that none of this is very surprising to me. And this is basically exactly how I expected things to play out. And I know people just say like, oh yeah, whatever. But I actually have made the trades in my stock portfolios to back up my actions. I bought leap calls on Tesla on Monday, specifically under the assumption that what was really going on here is that Trump was going to be entering into a gambit to try and actually do what he has talked about wanting to do for a long time. And that is to fix the very unfair trade practices going on around the world. And there's a lot of rhetoric around this, and it makes it somewhat confusing when you get too caught up in the specific talking points and you think he's too married to this policy or too married to that policy. And you know, the tariffs based on trade deficit, you know, divided by two are silly and ridiculous. And my position was that starting point, while it does indicate the framework that he wants to think about this, that these trade imbalances are more a better metric to measure what's going on than just tariffs, because they include all of the non-tariff trade barriers, like the value-added taxes, like the just regulatory burdens that American companies have to go. You know, I think Peter Navarro said something, and I know there's a lot of controversy about Peter Navarro right now in the Tesla community, specifically since Elon and Peter are going at it. But, you know, while Peter was absolutely retarded when he specifically talked about Tesla's business, he was absolutely not retarded when he was talking about the structure of the trade imbalances and the things it is that Trump wants to go after. And so the idea here is that, you know, we over the last number of decades, we embarked on this great experiment, the World Trade Organization. And the hope was that we are going to engage in free, and this is the key part, fair trade around the world. And by doing so, we're going to enter into a very magnanimous relationship with the world where everyone can trade and everyone can get richer and better based on that trade. And the thinking was that, well, you know, we're the United States, we're the wealthiest nation on earth, we should be able to do that, and we can afford to be generous in doing that. And if we will be generous in doing that, then we will pull more of the world in our direction. And so we were absolutely fine when all these other countries started putting tariffs on our goods and VAT taxes and just being very unfair in the way that they treated American companies when American companies wanted to do business abroad. We thought, well, you know, it's going to start out like that. You know, these countries actually need a leg up right now. And so it's not that big of a deal. It doesn't cost us that much. We can afford it, whatever. But the thing is, that never got better. Those countries didn't start to reduce those unfair trade practices over time, and they didn't move in our direction. So it was free trade, but it was anything but fair trade. And that's the thing that Trump has been going after. And then the structure of the negotiation is that he's going to just tell the whole world, you know what, giant middle finger to every single one of you. We have got to fix this. It's a huge problem, and we're going to fix it right now. And he already had all of the leverage that he needed to do this deal before he ever announced it. That's why he announced it when he did, is that he knew exactly what it was that he was going to do. He's going to start like, okay, we're going to announce massive tariffs that are way more destructive to other people's economies than they are to the U.S. economy. Like, if these tariffs were to go forward, it would be destructive to the U.S. economy, and that would be bad. But it would be less destructive to our economy and our government than it would be to every other country and every other government. So relatively, we were in a better position. And, you know, once you threaten something, you do have to be able to carry it out. But our relative strength in that position meant that, okay, we're going to have to start this massive conversation. And once the conversation started, then despite people kind of entering into the weekend with some bluster and saying that, you know, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, we're going to do this, the reality of the situation was they didn't have the cards. Trump had the cards. And so they were going to have to start negotiating. So then people are like, well, you know, there's just isn't enough time. I was like, well, obviously he's not serious. He doesn't actually want those trade deficit divided by two tariffs to be the real tariffs when all of this is said and done. That's just the opening, you know, start gun to begin this race that is these negotiations. And so I expected that after that, that we would start to see not only deals, but that for negotiations that needed to actually have more time, that we would then get a pullback from the time clock that had been set. And so this pause is, I think, not only, and this isn't just my opinion, I think a lot of the market expected this pause. I think that's why the market didn't go down any more than it did on Monday, is that I think a lot of people recognize that this is the most likely scenario. It's like, okay, the ball is rolling, you know, we're on the clock. This negotiation now has to move ahead, and it has to move ahead with literally every nation in the world. And once it moves ahead with every nation in the world, well, that's just going to take time. And so now here we are, we're paused. And I think the other thing that's absolutely clear is that really all of this isn't just about the United States and China, because they are the worst offender in the free and fair trade game, that we admitted them into the WTO. And since then, they have engaged in all sorts of unfair trade practices. And like, if they were an American company and they were engaging in the practices that they are engaging in against other companies in the United States stock market, they would get broken up because they are engaging in monopolistic behavior and completely illegal and unfair practices in many, many, many ways. And the reason that we admitted them into the WTO in the first place was we're like, okay, hey, if we do this free and fair trade, or if we do free trade with China, eventually they will become more and more democratic. They will become more and more like us. They will value the things that we value. They will actually become a freer nation. They will become a more enriched nation. And the fact of the matter is that while they have become richer, culturally, they have absolutely rejected the culture of the West. They still have the Great Firewall in place that keeps American, or really just culture and values from the rest of the world on the internet that they don't want from being able to penetrate the bubble of the thought bubble of China that they enforce through that firewall. You know, their markets are still opaque and subject to control and manipulation by the CCP. And the CCP is a very just non-democratic regime that is engaged in all sorts of, while, you know, they make life great for a large proportion of their population, they are also 100% not opposed to being very abusive towards marginal groups within their society. And so, I mean, like, it always amuses me somewhat that people want to say that Trump is the next Hitler when, in reality, based on the way that Xi treats certain portions of his population that are minorities, he's the one behaving much more like Hitler in reality. And so this is the situation that exists. And since we just have to acknowledge that the World Trade Organization was a massive failed experiment over the last 20 years at every level. Particularly when it comes to China, but even when it comes to everyone else. And so this is why, you know, brilliant people like Ray Dalio, you know, just like you could almost go down a long list of commentators and economists, like, you know, Thomas Sowell would agree on this. A whole bunch of people say that the diagnosis of the problem that Trump was dealing with was 100% correct and absolutely needs to be dealt with. And everyone's, criticism has been, hey, your solution looks like it's going to fail. My rebuttal to that point at this point in time is just that I think it's too soon to know what Trump's actual planned solution is. That right now we are in the fog of war of negotiation, and that the specific outline of how Trump wants to solve this problem is as yet unknown. That every, you know, all of the talking points about what the structure of this is going to look like are, you know, it's just for show. It's just talking points, proposals, ideas. And, you know, I think part of the reason for us not fully knowing what Trump is going to do is that he doesn't fully know what he's going to do, because he actually wants to engage in conversations and negotiations with all of these people to find out, okay, you know what? I know broadly what I want. I want to eliminate the unfair practices, particularly that China's engaged in, from affecting the United States in a negative way. How do we get there? You know what? That's a great question. I don't know. Let's talk to the government of France. Let's talk to the government of Germany. Let's talk to the government of Vietnam and Thailand and Japan and South Korea. And let's figure those things out. So I think that's what's happening now. And I think that that's going to happen. And I would say the broad strokes of the deal that I expect to be done are that the U.S. is going to be relentless about closing out any loopholes that are possible for China to exploit to reach the U.S. markets without loopholes or exploiting unfair advantages. And honestly, I think all of that is fair, that I really hate the way that this is going to turn out for the Chinese people. But I think we just have to be realistic about the fact that the CCP is never going to be a good faith partner to participate in a global order where fairness, reciprocity, and magnanimous ethics and moral character are the norm. That they're always the CCP is always going to try to exploit any and every opportunity that they can to their advantage. And they have a chip on their shoulder about the fact that China was one of the great nations of history and that they are coming out of this 100 years of humiliation. And they really feel like they are entitled to exploit us in any and every way possible because they have been exploited in any and every way possible in the past. And I wouldn't argue that they have been exploited in terrible and awful ways in the past. But I think that if you are going to view the world as this zero-sum game moving forward because you have been exploited in the past, instead of recognizing this moment as a moment where the game is changing completely when it comes to abundance and scarcity of labor and scarcity of resources because of the technology that is happening, that this is just a terrible time to be in such a zero-sum mindset. And so if, you know, I could wave a magic wand and get what I want to happen here in the next few years, it would be that China would actually capitulate on their zero-sum thinking mindset and decide that they would actually like to be a participant in the global world order on a fair basis, and that they would cease all of the unfair practice. Like, I think that if Chinese competition can outcompete Western counterparts on a fair and level playing field, more power to them. I think they absolutely can and should do that. And we, as the rest of the world, should cheer them on and benefit from the fruits of their labor, just as they benefit from the fruits of their labor. I think the world would be a much better place if that is going to happen. And I think there are definitely pockets of that actually happening as well. I think, you know, something like DeepSeek, where they are fully committed to open source software and they're contributing to this project of artificial intelligence in hugely meaningful and positive ways that are orthogonal to what, you know, like, shouldn't America be the leader in open source software, you might think, but no. You know, in AI, we have been the leaders in closed source, maximum power, and for-profit AI, which is terrible. And so their check on us in that area is great. It's great for the world. And I would love to see that example proliferate to the rest of the nation. Now, I don't know what's going to happen, but that's what I would like to see happen. And I think when you look at that example, or another great example is going to be, like, that's what we want to move to. What we have seen in China, and one of the things that is just an example that makes this glaringly obvious, is the fact that China invited automakers from around the world to enter into their markets over the past several decades. And what did they do to these automakers when they came in? They absolutely mugged them. They held a gun to their head and said, you will share your profits and all of your IP with our companies. And you will think that you are making money in the process for a short period of time. But when it's all said and done, we'll own you and we'll own everything. And then we will exfiltrate all of that away from your company. We'll cut off your ability to make profits in our market and we will kill you. And we'll not only kill you here in China, but in the process, we'll kill you abroad too. And that is the arc of the automotive industry in the future. If Trump were not to do this, the most likely scenario is that companies like BYD would get around the complicated set of tariffs and trade structures that existed around the world, and BYD would become one of the most, just the largest automotive manufacturers in the world, and it would kill almost all of the competition because China was using their entire economy to say, this is the one area, you know, one of the areas that we're just going to win in. And not only, and it's like BYD doesn't just have the benefit of their own, they've got great workers, they've got great strategists, they're making incredible products. All of that is true. They deserve to, you know, be praised for all of those things. But then they also have the support of the CCP in a strategic area. And when things go wrong, they have that at their back that can help them. And that's the part that just needs to change. And so that's where we've been. That's why this issue is such a huge problem. And I'm just impressed that we are actually taking measures right now that look like they might actually be able to, because, you know, this is not just a US and China problem. Every other country in the world also feels the impacts, you know, of the way that China has been engaging in these unfair practices. And like Germany's another great example. The German economy is highly tied to automotive, and now BMW and Volkswagen and all these other Porsche companies that are crown jewels of the German economy are being eviscerated because they had become dependent on the Chinese market. That had become one of their most profitable markets. But like I said, they were silly and they engaged in this exchange of IP and manufacturing expertise and experience. And now they are having to face competition from Chinese companies that is very, very difficult for them to be able to withstand. And that has the potential to tip the entire economy of Germany into a very, very, very bad place very quickly. So this isn't just, you know, a US and China problem. This is a global problem. And I think that fact also is one of the things that makes it much more likely that we are going to get to a global consensus that we are going to contain China economically, that this is an economic World War III, and that China is going to be contained, that we're not going to allow. Like, this is the ideal scenario. If you like, if you were to paint a picture of World War II, where instead of appeasing Nazi Germany when they invaded Austria, that the whole world got together and said, you know what, this is it, no more. We're just going to be done right here. You can have Austria and you're not an inch further. That is the type of situation that we're in today with China. And obviously the war looks different because we're in a post-nuclear age. And so the weapons of this warfare are primarily economic. But that's the lay of the land as I see it.
Jeff, thank you so much for joining us last minute. Obviously breaking news. I can't wait to hear what you have to say. So I'm just going to give you the mic. What's going through your head?
I mean, we've been talking about this for the last couple of days. The tariff rates were so absurdly high, like they couldn't stay. Like, it was just almost a freeze in trade for the most part. So that, I mean, part of this is playing out in terms of, all right, getting these group of countries together, kind of point everything towards China, got everything, everybody's saying the same thing. The way I kind of uniquely would want to look at it is, one is, we have 125% tariff on China, and we import a lot of China goods. So that problem is still on. So supply issues from multiple countries still, you know, still have to be worked out, but maybe short term, maybe contained. I want to talk about this 10%, because what I talk about with clients actually is putting this administration on a base case of like, what would this look like a couple months from now, however long you think this takes. And a lot of the conversation is, okay, how would your business run with a 10% tariff on the countries you're importing from, and what does it mean? And I think that's where we're at. I don't think that they're going away. I don't think that that's how, I think the announcement of the External Revenue Service is more permanent than not. I don't know. This president and this administration are unpredictable, but for me, those are very high tariff rates on every country coming and doing business. And you know what? With time, I think there's a path to adjust to that, but it does immediately blow up, I would say, a lot of business cases on a lot of like medium and small size companies and products, because I mean, a 10% increase is significant. I mean, it just in it's all at once. It's not like it's something that feathers in throughout the year. So, but it does leave some room for adjustment. I think the 10% is what people should be planning on. But that's just a tariff. That's just a duty. There's all the other non-tariff barriers. And then there's all these opportunities maybe for now for us to do business in other countries. But what I kind of walk away from this is we still have 125% with China. I think that's going to lead to a lot of supply issues. I think we're going to have supply issues due to business case problems. Before, it was like basically there were massive business cases turned upside down between countries and U.S. manufacturers making product. And that is still the case, but now to a smaller extent. But, you know, China going to 125, it's just a question of it's getting so absurdly high that you're basically not trading at that point. And so I my optimistic side says the higher that number goes, maybe the closer we actually are to a deal with them. But I think it's going to take some period of time because the issues with China are so complex. But so it just, I know there's a lot of champagne corks popping right now, but when I put my supply hat on, I think there's, if I were to play this out over the next 30 days, like if this doesn't wrap up quickly and we don't get to down to something closer to 10%, which again is going to be a big impact for companies still, you're going to see the next round of things you're going to see are companies that can't produce product and lay people off. And then you're going to see supply shocks for the companies that do decide to stay in business. And that's what you're going to start seeing in the news. And then then you may start seeing concerns of recession and unemployment going up. So there's going to be a lot of competing narratives. But to me, this isolating China is where I thought it would go, and I'm glad it would go. But I am still very concerned about the supply situation.
Jeff, so just real quickly, can you comment on, like, if both things happen, if we are getting closer, like, if there's basically certainty in the market regarding the fact that there are going to be deals and that the deals are going to be mostly fair, and then there's the also perfectly valid recognition that, yeah, and it's going to be really choppy short-term economically for a whole bunch of nations and a whole bunch of businesses. Like, how do you think the market responds to certainty around where the tariff war is going and where it's going to end and what that means right here, right now for a lot of people that are in acute pain?
You mean in terms of if the 10% tariffs stay on, it for the companies that don't have super resilient, higher gross margin businesses that are making hardware, that are making products, you know, that's gonna cause some problems. My advice to these companies is get in the room, dump all the parts on a table, Apollo 13 style, let's go. You're not gonna get 10% maybe in one swoop, but you could get a couple, and you could be you have to just like, look, we gotta think out of, there's something about, and I teach this in terms of design for value, there's something about a target and a date. And it's and you get people rallied around, like in Apollo 13, like we have to get them home. Like, we have this amount of time to figure this out. Same thing with this situation. The best defense for these companies is to go look at their unit economics. And by the way, everybody's like, well, if they could do this, they would have done it yesterday. Well, there's a different bit of urgency right now because the whole world order has basically changed. And you have to put the administration on a hand, poker term. I think the hand is some sort of residual tariff. I don't think the External Revenue Service is going away. I think he wants to say, I'm taking in billions and billions of dollars, so he'll be able to continue to say that. And by the way, it's still not party time when we have basically a supply, like it's almost an import ban on China. I mean, 125% tariffs. Who's gonna, you know, import and keep selling? And like these, I see these ridiculous things of, like, you know, Trump Liberation Day and putting it. I mean, I know it's cute and it looks fine, but to me as a consumer, it's kind of a joke. I don't want to see that. I want you to just go solve the problem with your importer. I want you to take your costs down. I don't want you to just blame the administration, which, by the way, I'm not happy with how this is all being managed. But, you know, so I think for consumers, I think it's going to be a mixed bag. It's certainly better than where we were 12 hours ago.
I definitely want to pick your brain on that China piece, but I want to bring in Larry real quick. Larry, what's going through your head since, yeah, hi. How are you?
Hi, guys. Yeah, when you make a bad mistake, you try and cover it up as best you can and do a little bit of tap dancing. We're seeing some tap dancing right now. I mean, this was a very poorly executed strategy. I don't know if the strategy was right or wrong, but whatever it was so poorly executed as to blow back against the administration, and they're doing the best they can. They took a rumor from yesterday morning and turned it into a strategy for today. 90-day wait, and all 75 people have come to us and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, every administration has a misstep. This was a fairly significant misstep. I'm very supportive of President Trump in his objectives. Now the question is, how do they rescue the situation? And Jeff is right. It's one thing to put a 90-day stop on these other countries, but where does the bulk of supply come from for manufacturers and retailers alike? China. There are ships on the sea right now. Those boats have got a lot of product in them. What are we going to do? Charge a 125% tariff on those? Come on. It's not feasible. I mean, I already see the problems. I already see the pain on the Amazon web pages. So we have multiple problems. The first is trying to turn this mistake into a strategy. The second is dealing with this problem of China right now. China's got a very strong hand in this conversation, very strong hand. And had we started the other way around, had we started negotiating with 75 countries and not put the screws on China to the extent that we had, we may have been in a different position, but we're not. So the question is how to deal with it. And Jeff is right. Those people who really depend upon these components from China for their retail sales, for their manufacturing, for their, you know, for their supply chain in general, they're going to have to scramble, and they're going to be in a world of hurt. This is going to reset China-American relationships for the next century, half century, much like Nixon did in 1972. This is going to be the same sort of moment. And it really sets China up as the, you know, as the Russia of the 70s and 60s and 70s. So we've got a lot of work to do. On the other hand, could Trump and Xi sit down and end up shaking hands? They both have the propensity to be able to pull it off. I don't know that they will. So I'm not remarkably hopeful. I'm very pessimistic. I'm pessimistic as to the U.S. economy for the next period, year to 2 years. I'm pessimistic about U.S.-Chinese relationships, and I'm also pessimistic for the Trump administration and the upcoming, 16 months, 17 months time, the congressional elections and midterms. So I don't have a lot of happy talk for you guys. Yeah.
No, I mean, I love the different perspective. So before Jeff and you joined, Larry, Hans was going down a path, which I'm more aligned with, I think, is that this is not so much a mistake, but it's part of the plan. And I know that's probably hard to agree with from your perspective. But I guess the way I'm looking at it is, if we're thinking about the absolutely prohibitive tariff that are put on China, where they're not going to be able to sell that product realistically into the United States in full, there's no way. There's no way. It might collapse down to 10% sell through for those products, right? Because of those tariffs. Where else? Who else is going to be able to buy that stuff? What other customer? What other economy can absorb that?
Look at Elon Musk's comment yesterday to Pete Navarro. Why do you think he made that comment? Elon is as clued in as anybody could be on international trade. He understands these things. The real question is, how do you get back from a serious mistake? I know Hans thinks this is part of some, you know, people talk about 3D and 4D chess and 5D chess and all that crap. This was a mistake. Simple. I mean, it wasn't a complex mistake. It was a very simple mistake. And it was almost understandable. Almost. The question is how to get back. That's the question. And really, Xi and Trump are the only people who together can solve this problem. It's a huge problem for Xi. It's a huge problem for Trump. It's a bigger problem for Trump than for Xi because Trump has only got 3 years.
I 100% disagree with you on that point specifically. It is a way bigger problem for Xi than it is for Trump because Xi can die. Trump just loses office.
Well, you may be right, but I don't think you understand the Chinese mentality. I strongly recommend you speak to some, you know, China people, not Chinese people, but people who watch China and who are very close to China. China has, you know, they have a 1,000-year view on this thing. So, you know, you think that Xi can die. He's in an immovable position. The chances of him losing his position, look, when last did a leader of China get deposed?
So,
you know,
if you bring it back, I mean, if you try to connect some of these things together, it's a little bit calamitous, right? The whole thought was everybody's a genius. Look at the bond market. Look at the yields going down. They're going down. They're going to be able to refinance the debt at the end of May. And then boom, overnight, it's 4.5%. So now you have a policy where your parts that are coming in are more expensive and nobody wants to buy your bonds. That is, depending on where that goes, that could have been calamitous. I mean, that could have been a big issue. Did I think that, like, was that the trigger? Not sure. We're never going to know. I always, like I said, I think a lot of these things can be true. It's a question of the timing. Like, so Besant was saying, like, okay, this has always been the plan. Squeeze everybody, get them to the table and go. That's fine. Understand that. But I think that they would have wanted the bond yields to be in a much different direction than where they ended up overnight. And that bond auction yesterday was terrible. The one this morning was kind of a little bit of a clue. It was much better. But I still return back to, you have businesses and you have retailers in the U.S. that have 5% margin, 3% margin, 10% margin. And now you're going to take the stuff that comes in, it's either an input to their manufacturing process or something that they retail. And you're going to say, I didn't give you enough time to source it anywhere else. And I want you now to, you have to figure this out. Now, this whole thing about, you know, we have the biggest market. China exports $3.3 trillion of product. And we're somewhere in the $350 to $400 billion range, depending on which website you go to and look to. Maybe it's a little bit higher. The point is we're not, it's not this Canada-Mexico relationship. We're not 75% of what they export. But we're big.
Yeah, Jeff, just a little correction on that. We are much bigger than 350 billion because that 350 billion is direct import. But there's a very significant amount of Chinese imports in other imports that we do. So
yeah,
it's closer to half a trillion is my understanding of the real number.
So we may be a bigger number, but the point is a half, 500 billion out of 3.3 trillion of exports. It's not like, anyway, it's a big deal for them.
I'm not quite 15% at 5-10% margin. I mean, that's a lot. That's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wouldn't you agree?
I understand it, but the point is it's not like that they had to capitulate overnight. This could have gone on. This can go on. I mean, we're still dealing with this now. So here we are. we're a week after Liberation Day. Liberation Day was kind of expected to be roughly 10% tariffs, and all of a sudden we got this big surprise. And I think people would have been okay with a little bit more on China and then some base case for everyone else, bring everyone to the table.
Right.
I'm telling you, 10% tariffs would bring people to the table. This is a big, big number given how much we consume of the global economy. And you just have to, we have to, the other side we have to be careful with, we export a shit ton of services, software, SaaS services. We have to be careful. We're in a massive surplus. So on Singapore, we put a 10% tariff on Singapore. We're already at a goods surplus with Singapore, and we have a massive services surplus with them, and we still put a 10% tariff. So anyway, as I step back from this, I'm worried about supply and this China. Hopefully we're closer to the end of the China negotiation. And I'm not sure we had to go through this path to get there. I'm not in this camp of everybody's going to hate us forever. I'm not in that camp. It depends what kind of deal we do on the other side, and is it perceived to be fair?
So let's walk through that 125 on China now. So it went from 104 to 125. Everybody else is down to 10. There's a 90-day pause on everybody except for China. So what is China's next step here? Are you expecting a retaliation back? Are you expecting, okay, you're going up to 150 now? Like you know, when you say the United States, you know, I'm curious to see. Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, you brought up a very important, you triggered a very important point in my mind. Very bullish thing that the president did not raise the tariff 50%. He only raised it 21%.
Why?
Because he was going up in 50% increments before, and now he's going up in 21% increments. This is like a poker hand, and you're looking at like, okay, what did they bet in the first, when the flop came, what did he bet? Okay, now he started pulling his... Why did she start pulling her bet back? Well, is this like, did their hand get weaker? Like what happened? I don't know. But to me, it's a little bit of an opening of a door to say I was going up in 50% increments before, and now I'm only going up 21%. So it's almost like you're de-escalating the escalation.
So
Larry, what do you think?
Speaking of the right side.
What do you think, Larry?
Look, you know, he has to get off the wall. Trump has to get off the wall. He climbed down quite significantly earlier today. I think that he'll be encouraged. If I were Xi, I wouldn't push him that much further. I would actually come to terms with him, but I'm not Xi. Xi is a very tough, very, very tough cookie. I think Xi may actually turn the screw a little bit more before he relents, just to show who's boss. I know Hans said that, you know, he could lose his life over this. He is about as solid in his position as any ruler in the world today, even more solid than Putin, I would say. So I don't think that's a risk for him. The only thing was, you know, he was relenting. He was allowing business to flourish a little bit out of necessity, I guess, because they're trying to deal with this property disaster. But this has definitely stiffened his resolve, and it's going to be tough, really, really tough. This is going to call for all of Trump's negotiating skills and capacity. He could pull a rabbit out of the hat. But I can tell you, we're going to go through a very tough time between now and the time that rabbit comes out of the hat. So, yeah, the market's returned a little bit of zest. But look at the bond rates. I mean, that tells the entire story right there. So you know, I know Scott Bessent just talking a good game, and Butnick is talking a good game, but it's not a good game situation. And I'd love to hear what Elon has to say out of this, and I'm watching very carefully what he tweets. He stayed in his lane, other than his note to Navarro, which spoke volumes to me, absolute volumes. So now we'll have to see what happens. But it's going to take Trump's very, very finest, you know, rabbit out of hat kind of performance.
Hans, did you want to jump in? I saw you were coming off mute earlier.
I think that the fentanyl deal is definitely something to watch for. It doesn't make sense that China wouldn't back off of subsidizing fentanyl pretty much right away. And so I think there are two possibilities if they don't come off of that very quickly. One of them is that Xi doesn't actually have the political capital necessary to back off from that. And then the other one is that Xi doesn't want to back off of it because it would be perceived as weak. And like Larry said, he wants to put the screws to the United States and to Trump as much as possible. But I think it sends a very clear message. If it's that important to China to continue subsidizing the death of Americans to the tune of hundreds of thousands per year, then I say go for the jugular, Trump. And on that, we actually have the cards.
And I think, in the other variable too, I think and I'm happy that we kind of have like two sort of like on a different spectrum here for this conversation. I think it's so hard to ignore the glaring over-reliance on China that was exposed during COVID, one. And then two, right, the obvious flight away from China because of that. I think those two things are very massive forcing functions that are working against Xi on top of the demographic as well, which is more longer term, right? So it's kind of like both players. It's like who sucks less, just like in any other sport. It's not about how strong you are, but how who sucks less of the two, you know? And it's going to be very interesting. I think if we tie it back to the Tesla story for a bit here, do you guys view this as the stock's up 18% right now. I mean, the whole market's exploding. But how do you view this impact to the company specifically? Do you think this is a boon for Tesla's ability to maybe sell at lower rates into Europe? Do you think this is maybe there's some form of something else going on that could benefit the company? Do you see any reads there, or is it too early? Is the China variable just too large for us to get a good grasp?
I'll start just because my point is going to be the shortest probably, and that is if this doesn't result in China invading Taiwan, I think this is great for Tesla long term. It might involve some short term choppiness. If it does result in China invading Taiwan, which I view as a real possibility, then I think that this would be very terrible. Like in the event that China invades Taiwan, I think you basically kiss Tesla China goodbye. And that would be very, very awful for not just the short term, but the medium term. I think Tesla can survive that long term, but that in the short to medium, it would be awful. And those are the two scenarios that I see.
Larry or Jeff, who wants to go first?
I don't see China invading Taiwan in the short term. I don't think it's in their interest. I think they view that as a longer term opportunity. That would be my view.
And you don't think this pressure accelerates that pressure on them?
No, I don't think so. I don't think they see this as a forcing function. I think they, China has the ability to look many years down the road, and they have a military plan. The military plan seems to come to culmination something like a decade ahead, 5 to 10 years ahead, when they will be dominant in the Pacific, and will probably be able to negotiate their way into Taiwan. So I think they're thinking about that. I think they're building up their forces to be clearly dominant, and that's when they will take over Taiwan. I think that's how they're thinking about it. I don't think this changes it. I think, I think that the negotiation now, I think Xi must think himself to be in the pound seats as far as negotiation is concerned. And so I think that China sees itself in a very good position in this process. There's an interim period where times are tough. You know, you forget about this as a country where they're able to lock down their entire population, for almost 2 years. This is a country where, you know, the leader can do these kinds of things with impunity. So I think having that power, he doesn't face a forcing function. So having that power and, you know, looking at 25% of his exports.
I look at that power as making him fragile, not anti-fragile. There's a point where that breaks.
I don't see it even coming close to that, but you know, we can agree to disagree. Jeff, what do you think?
I'm not sure I got the original question down. Just
Tesla. What does this mean for Tesla? And then Hans went on a Taiwan thing, and then Larry went on a Taiwan thing.
Yeah, I mean, just realize Tesla is. I think they're working on they have a dual fab strategy for that, dual supplier strategy for their AI computer. And I mean, if you look at the point of origin of the AI, the assembly, there are ones that say made in Taiwan and there are ones that say made in Mexico. So you have the silicon, you have the chip, and then you have the entire computer. So it's just something to think about. I mean, I think there's still a lot of fog in the cockpit. So first off, Tesla relative to anybody else that makes cars, still in a very good position, even with, you know, what they're going to do with the any electrical components coming from China. You know, they're going to work on some sort of 30-day deal with inventory, and maybe they'll burn through more of their piece part inventory for some period of time. I can't see them doing big buys at 125%. So for Tesla, somebody that manages their inventory very tightly, it's not like they can, you know, wait on some of the stuff. So they're probably going to have to take a little bit of a hit, but it's a very small portion of the bill of material. I think this story doesn't get properly told until recently. It looks like we're in this spot with Mexico of, you know, honoring the USMCA that helps on components. So I think if you step back for Tesla, I still think the auto business is in a good position. But what I actually think has happened, and I'll get to energy in a bit, but what I actually think has happened is the robotaxi business becomes even stronger. Because where are some people's robotaxis made and imported into the U.S.? They're made in China. Where are the parts for those robotaxis made? And not saying that robotaxis are so much a hardware game, but that hardware just became a lot more expensive. Where is Tesla's hardware right now? It's actually already deployed in every existing economic zone today. Tesla has millions of cars in the EU. They have millions of cars in China, and they have millions of cars on the road in the US. So their whole approach of building this hardware in and having it lie dormant is basically skirting past these new tariffs, and they can just light this thing up. As long as these tariffs don't escalate into a software SaaS services side, which I think that's a kind of a red line at this point. I think the robotaxi position even improved. Now, if you go to my subscriber page on X, I put up some information about where the top 10 forecasts right now are for the North America car market this year. There's companies like Cox Auto. There's basically saying like, oh, maybe a 300K reduction on a 16.5 million unit base, not a big deal. But there's some forecasts that are calling for 2 to 2.5 million, 3 million. So there's kind of a wide distribution on forecasts. So when that happens, people that do supply planning, they tend to use a couple of them. They don't use all 10 of them, but you know, it does tell you that there's kind of wide variation. The U.S. auto market is really not profitable below 15 million units. That's when the OEMs get squeezed, and then that's where the suppliers get really squeezed. Now, if you layer the tariffs on top of demand destruction, which are kind of one happening together, now you've said you've cut into their input costs, and then you've dampened their demand. So that's what we have to watch out for. If this is a 14 to 15 million unit year in North America, that's a problem. Now, it looks like there's still really nice growth for EVs. So there could be segment level growth of macro auto slows down, EVs continue going, right? And guess what phenomena just happened? Tesla's carved out of a lot of these tariffs, the others aren't. We just killed the Chevy Equinox. You just killed the Mach-E. You just killed a number of these vehicles that have these final assembly tariffs, which I don't think
gas cars too. Yeah. Not just EVs.
Yeah, right? There's 20 models. I have a list on my page of like 20 models below 45K that are final assembled outside of the US. They're going to get roasted. And then even the ones that are assembled in the US, they're still going to have the 10% tariffs. And for a hardware auto, that is a big number. They don't have 10% margins on their hardware. Remember, a lot of their margins come from post-sales, warranty, all these, you know, the financing arm. They don't generally have 10% margins on the hardware side. If it is, it's rare. So for Tesla, I think auto-wise, I think their position strengthens as long as there's not some massive 50, 60% drawdown in demand. And nobody's really calling for that. But, you know, the recession birds were starting to, you know, really chirp loud this morning. Energy is getting worse in the U.S. So with these tariffs on cells coming out of China, I mean, you now have 125% tariff. It starts, you know, meaningfully impacting. Now, Tesla had a lead time of about, I don't know, 4 quarters if you wanted to order a new Megapack system. So it's not like they had a demand issue. And we don't know their inventory situation on cells. Tesla's supply chain is very smart. I wouldn't be surprised if they've given themselves considerable runway. That's not for free, meaning bringing in a lot of cell capacity, a lot of cell inventory ahead of them potentially coming to their own LFP solution. So we got to watch Tesla Energy. And because what's happening with China, it could escalate even further. China could put an export ban and just say, we're not shipping batteries anymore. If you really want to put...
In the matter of batteries, what about the possibility of putting 4680s in the Megapacks?
Yeah, I mean, it's a question of, you know, energy density. It's a question of space. It's a question, I mean, I'm sure for months the team has a whiteboard with and a strategy for all different kinds of scenarios of bringing more inventory, negotiating some carve out. Obviously, bringing up the Shanghai capacity is going to help for the rest of the world. So they are mitigating at a great clip. It's just, can you close the gap and can you keep 40, 50 gigawatt hours coming out of, you know, California? The best thing for Megapacks would be is to get locally sourced in the U.S., not only inside of our economic zone, but now you start taking all that mass that we've been shipping, you know, for all this time, and instead of having this long supply chain from a latency perspective, you really tighten it up. So I'd love to see that this is forcing them to do domestic supply. I'm happy that that's happening. But I think the robotaxi, if demand goes down, I still think the robotaxi piece strengthens, that plows through this. And then, you know, everybody's talking about humanoids. You know, I think this definitely, you just keeps the, you know, accelerant under that and keeping that going. I do think, you know, if these trade barriers stay up like they are and we're still this adversarial with China, I mean, I just don't think there's any way that we're going to even be exchanging our bots back and forth. So now you're thinking about more, you know, regionalized in terms of humanoid, right? But that's not a problem for several years, to be honest with you. And I think there's going to be so much demand in the world. I think your head's going to spin. So
what's interesting about the humanoid piece, and I'll wrap it up here because I know everybody's busy and I'm sure everybody wants to absorb more information, but the bot piece, it's almost like, is it a national security risk if you allow a competing country to sell a humanoid robot into your country? So isn't the natural, like the natural way this is going to play out is that the U.S. is going to get humanoids from Aptronik, Tesla, Figure. China's going to get it from blah, blah, blah. EU.
Correct.
I think that's the natural conclusion of this regardless.
Yeah.
Well, the EU is in trouble. I mean, they're not doing anything on bots. So, you know, do they buy it from China or they buy it from Tesla? I mean, or from the US? I think that's pretty clear. The EU situation is a very interesting situation. I think EU is going to have to end up on the side of the US, whether they like it or not. That's just the reality, I think. So I think it's going to be very good for Tesla. Ultimately, I think this is going to be excellent for Tesla. I think Tesla China is going to do well. I think Tesla USA is going to do well. And I think Tesla Berlin is going to do very well.
And Ron Vara got spiked in all of this. And that's a big deal. You know who Ron Vara is?
Oh, the imaginary guy who's the expert?
Yeah. So... Notice all the posts, notice all the press conferences today. Don't include that person. That's important because, first off, came at Tesla on the basis of Tesla, and Elon responded on the basis of, like, you don't know how products are even made. I did a video of that on Monday. I couldn't believe what I was hearing when he said that, because I actually think it's a huge flaw when you're in these critical trade negotiations to get on TV. And you're supposed to understand trade and what gets made where, and you make these statements. So anyway, just notice that he wasn't in there. I think that's important. And back to Tesla, number one, they got to make the point. They even had networks like CNN defending Tesla and defending Musk.
Stuff.
This could be a little bit of a turn. I'm not saying there's a wedge between Elon and the White House, but there's certainly a wedge of, like, certain factions. And
if there was a wedge, this moment proves that Elon has emerged.
Yes.
Victorious.
Correct.
I mean, this may be an extremely important moment for Elon that Elon came out so strongly against Navarro, so bluntly, I think told us everything we needed to know about what was going on.
Yes.
And if anybody can negotiate a settlement between Xi and Trump, it may be Elon.
Yep. Agreed.
And Tim. And Tim Apple.
Tim Apple. Tim, I mean, these are two.
Yeah. No, Tim can't negotiate with Trump. He can speak for Xi, but he cannot negotiate with Trump.
I don't know about whether he can speak for Xi. I think the level of trust in Elon in China and the level of trust that Trump has in Elon, I think this is what is of great value. I mean, Tim is obviously a well received in China. He's a big client and so on and so forth. But it's a whole different level.
Yeah.
Apple was never able to own a factory in China.
That's very true.
Yeah, so I think that's where we are, and I think that it's very important that Elon, be prepared to and is brought into this conversation, because I think he's brought a lot of sense to it, brings a lot of sense to it, and I think he can be the deus ex machina of making this thing turn.
That can be your intro.
Yeah, I love it. Anything else we want to hit before we wrap this up? Okay. So I'm sure this will change again in 24 hours, and then we'll be back. Watch out for China's retaliation. So the biggest takeaway that I've heard is watch out how China retaliates, if they retaliate, given that Trump has signaled a lower rate of increase on the tariffs. Let's see how quickly Trump can get the 75 countries or whoever that he's talked to the table to make a deal, and follow the bond markets, because like Larry said, I think that's...
I would also say track the shape of those deals. I'm one
shape.
Sorry, we didn't hear that. Could you say
one of the things that I think is important is to track the shape of those deals. I think the shape of those deals tells you what the Trump administration is actually after. And my prediction is that what he's actually after, more so than almost anything else in this, is mitigating whether China can use that specific country as a pass-through to escape the things that are holding their feet to the fire on fair trade.
Okay, this is going to be a whole other show. First off, that's very hard to do at scale. I'm not saying it hasn't happened, but to set that up at scale, the U.S. is part of their deal with Vietnam. They could put provisions in place for this. I'm not saying it's going to be perfect. It's going to catch everything, but there are ways to deal with origin, managing origin requirements. I'm not saying it's simple, but it can be done. Keep watching for supply issues. I keep talking about it. We have 125% tariff on stuff coming in from a huge importer. So just keep an eye on that, because if companies can't make stuff or their gross margins come down as a result of just even the residual, tariff that's on, you have earnings coming up. So we have earnings coming up. They have to guide. Are they going to guide? Are they going to pull guidance? And then watch for supply.
And watch for freight shipping rates.
Well, they came
more than anything.
They came
else.
Way down, because they've been empty. They've been unbooked. They've been rebooked, unbooked, and the rates came way down. So yeah.
And the first sign of a break will be them turning around. So watch that very carefully. And in theory, they should be way up because of the Suez Canal. But yeah, it's amazing that they came down as far. So watch that anyway.
Super interesting times. And we're closing. Tesla is at session highs, $268.55, up 21%.
By the way, I'll remind you that on a Monday night, I told Randy I went long on both Tesla and on Nvidia.
Oh, wow. How's that feel right now?
Well, now the question is these are both, options I took, and yep. So I've got to make a decision now.
I just sold one of my six options that I bought on Monday.
Bunch of brilliant guys on this panel right now. All right, everybody. Thank you for stepping in. I'll see you probably tomorrow at this rate. Okay. I'm going to end recording here.
Next chapter. Yeah.